Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Only 6 weeks after the federal government approved a permit for Royal Dutch Shell Oil to commence with exploratory drilling in the Arctic's Chukchi Sea, the global fossil fuel giant has decided to abandon its operations there indefinitely. The company is claiming that its decision was based on disappointing preliminary findings of oil and gas reserves. Shell has poured billions of dollars into potential Arctic Sea oil and gas. It has claimed the offshore Arctic drilling was a potential game changer. In fact, the U.S. Geological Survey supported those claims, having estimated that the area contains at least 26 billion barrels of oil. Why then did the world's third largest oil company decide to pull out? Activists who have confronted Shell in creative ways over Arctic drilling in the last few months say their work has something to do with it. There's also the financial issue of plummeting oil prices that may be playing a role. Joining me now is Daphne Wysham. She's the director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Center for Sustainable Economy. Welcome to Uprising, Daphne.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also with us is Sweetwater Nanauk, who is the director of Idle No More Washington. Welcome to Uprising, Sweetwater.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Sweetwater, let me start with you. How significant is this decision to stop the drilling? It seems to have surprised many activists who've been involved.
Yes, it is a surprise. My friend Faith up in with the Red Oil said it well. She said she's still shell-shocked.
Faith Gemmel, in fact, who was on our program just a couple of weeks ago to talk about this, to talk about Obama's visit to Alaska.
Yes, but, you know, it's a great celebration and victory that we all, you know, are celebrating, because it's not only been bad for business, as you know, for Shell from the very beginning, but the cost of drilling, the impact on the environment, the traditional way of life of indigenous people in the Arctic, would cause irreparable contribution to the climate change, you know. So it's a great, very significant and really proud to be part of this.
Daphne, do you attribute Shell's decision to the pressure from activists, or are there other issues too? Shell didn't even really finish its exploratory phase of drilling.
I think this was clearly a victory for activism. Shell will try to downplay it and claim that, you know, the price of oil was low and that there are other hurdles in the way. But those hurdles were put in the way in large part by environmental groups, Native folks up in Alaska working on making sure that there were very strong restrictions imposed on the drilling operations up there. And of course, those of us in Portland and Seattle who took to kayaks in the water and tried to prevent the drilling rig and the icebreaker from leaving drew attention to just how reckless this operation was going to be in the Arctic. And that ultimately had a huge impact on Shell's reputation. We know for a fact that they were taken aback by all of the opposition to their plans to drill in the Arctic. And I think they ultimately decided the cost just wasn't worth it.
And Sweetwater, how potentially destructive would Shell's operations have been had they gone through with it, both in the drilling of itself, so the potential damage to the environment, and then in the burning of the oil down the line?
Well, it would have greatly impacted the indigenous people's way of life. I'm originally born and raised in Alaska, and we have a subsistence lifestyle up there, relying on the traditions of our ancestors of hunting and gathering and stuff. So it would have really impacted their way of life. You know, when there was an oil spill, it would have been so damaging to the environment and land. I know there's no way they could clean it all up. I mean, we still suffer from the impacts of even the Exxon Valdez oil spill, you know, back in 1989. So we know they can't clean it all up. And then the contribution to climate change. As you know, we have the mega droughts, mega fires, the rising sea levels. Alaska was some of the first climate change refugees. And then contributing to more extreme weather, as we see now, there is no way they could combat that.
Daphne, the company spent billions betting its future on offshore Arctic drilling. And so that makes this decision to back off all the more surprising. Is this a done deal? Or do you think Shell might try to sneak back into this area once the activism focuses on something else? Or will its permits expire before it can do so?
Well, we've heard from Shell that they are canceling their attempts to drill indefinitely. And I think they have made a wise decision because they, as I said earlier, they've been paying a very high price in terms of damaged reputation globally. Would they try to sneak back in? I doubt it. I think what they are witnessing and what we're seeing really in the last few weeks are a cascading set of victories for the climate. I mean, think about this. We've got a fossil fuel divestment movement that picked up $2.6 trillion in pledges to divest just in the last week. China joined numerous other nations and publicly financed institutions in agreeing to limit its high carbon financing. Brazil said they would cut their emissions by 43% by 2030. And then we get Shell announcing that it's going to withdraw from oil and gas drilling in the Arctic. And I would say all of these victories reveal the power of ordinary people taking extraordinary action, whether it's students divesting their universities, kayaktivists blockading ships en masse as they did in Seattle and in Portland, thousands marching in the streets as they did in New York. All of us are really having an impact. And I think oil companies and gas companies would be wise to avoid exploring in regions where there are no more where there aren't proven reserves, because we know science tells us we need to leave unproven reserves off limits. And even those that are proven, we need to leave 80% of proven reserves in the ground. So the writing's on the wall, and hopefully the oil companies are paying attention.
Sweetwater, I mentioned earlier President Obama recently visited Alaska. He spent several days with members of various indigenous communities. Didn't he come under fire for approving Shell's permit to drill in the Chukchi Sea?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, on one hand, because I was up there, we did a rally up there in Anchorage, and on one hand, he's saying how we need to protect the Arctic and, climate change and everything. But on the other hand, opening up the drilling and allowing this to happen, it's...
So he gave Shell the permit, and now Shell has decided against this, which is really interesting. I mean, it would have certainly, I think, felt a much more sincere. His words on the climate would have felt much more sincere if he could have quashed this through simply not approving the permit.
Absolutely. He could have done something about this, you know, that I'm glad the way it's turned out. So it's great to see. So, is happening today, and many of the indigenous people they've come out and spoke up about that too. What's happening? This isn't, you know, we can't let this happen. So.
Daphne, what about the fact that oil prices have fallen so low? Could that have figured into Shell's decision to not consider this very expensive drilling operation to be sort of financially prohibitive? I mean, we've seen oil and gas companies make their projections quite strongly based on the current price of oil. If oil prices are low, then any resulting oil from offshore drilling just wouldn't cover the costs of that drilling.
Well, look, you know, now that we've won, now that the people have won, Shell and others are saying, oh, it's only because the price of oil is so low. But look at their words before we won. They were saying the price of oil would be a minor factor in their decision to proceed with Arctic drilling in 2015, largely due to the fact that there's an expected lengthy lag between the start of possible drilling programs and production. It could be another 10 or 15 years. Certainly the price of oil will probably go up between now and 2030. So, you know, for them to say, oh, it's only economics, it had nothing to do with all of these protests, I think is a bit disingenuous.
Right. So the time lag, and as oil prices get scarcer, gets scarcer, prices will rise. And there's also, of course, reserves. These are companies that are looking for long-term viability. They're looking to, this is projected, planning for their future viability. And according to them, I mean, is it possible that the idea that there really wasn't much oil and gas to begin with, which is what they're saying on paper, is that a possibility? Do you believe that at all?
Well, yeah, I do. I think that's part of it. And also, they're right. There were some very strict regulations put in place that made it difficult for them to drill within a certain, you know, they could only drill, I think it was 15 miles apart between each one of their attempts in the Chukchi Sea. So, and they wanted to drill in a region closer together, and that would have had a great impact on fisheries and on walruses and other sea life. So the environmentalists made sure that the federal regulations were as strong as possible. The Alaska Natives played a key role in ensuring that those regulations were very strong, and thankfully, we've won, and now we just need to make sure that President Obama declares the entire Arctic region off limits to drilling, to upholding what climate scientists tell us we need to do, which is to leave unproven reserves in the ground.
And Sweetwater, can you tell us and put this whole victory into context? Can you describe the very creative activism that particularly Indigenous communities participated in against Shell over the past year? There were actions in various parts of the country, in the Northwest in particular, in Canada as well.
Yes. Well, one thing I want to bring to your attention, too, is so a lot of the work I do, I call it spiritual activism. And the last time Shell was here in Seattle and was heading up to the Arctic, we did a prayer and meditation for the Arctic. And the way I describe that is bringing the light and truth down and shining it on them. And when people have bad intentions, everything comes back to them. So everything went wrong the last time they were trying to head up there. Ships breaking down, big giant, you know, storms up there that they lost their ship for 5 days. These things, I would say, are acts of God, you know. And so even now, even what we did here in Seattle, the Idle No More, from the Arctic to the Salish Sea and Native Women's Rising, what we're doing is ceremonies. What we're doing is prayer. That actually lays the foundation for the work that everyone else is doing. We're helping support that work in a spiritual manner. Because, you know, and that's a lot of what I teach in my workshops. It's time for the activists to become spiritual and the spiritual people to become active. Because healing ourselves is also healing for the earth. Working together in unity has been prophesied by many Indigenous cultures over the around the world. So we're right now in that time, and it's a great pivotal time in our history. So it's you know, the work has to continue. You know, last year the Sierra Club brought me to D.C. and several people to do lobbying to make the Arctic Refuge a wilderness. And when we were there, I said, we need to do some prayers here. So I led a prayer there. And even coming up to Alaska, that was like the third step in this work that had to be done. So I just want to put that out there, that the spiritual work is a foundation for this work. And that's what will be different about activism from now on.
And Daphne, I want to go back to what we were discussing. You mentioned that it's important to declare the Arctic off limits. And, you know, lest we simplify what has come out of the federal government in its announcement to decide when it decided to abandon the Arctic, Shell cited the, quote, challenging and unpredictable federal regulatory environment in offshore Alaska as another reason, in addition to there not being enough oil, for why it stopped operations. What do you make of that?
Well, again, you know, I mean, I think whether it's claiming that the regulatory environment was hostile, or, you know, that the price of oil is too low, Shell is looking for all kinds of excuses other than to say, look, we really had egg on our face. We got a black eye in the public sphere People were marching in the streets in London. They were marching in the streets in Portland, in Seattle, out in the water. This was a huge, I really can't understate, this was a huge victory for people power. The people in Alaska, you know, led the way, and the Native people in particular. And, you know, I think the power that Sweetwater just mentioned, the power of the spirit, is we're starting to see that in, you know, the leadership of the Pope. For example, look at the amount of attention that the Pope's visit to Washington, D.C. and New York and Philadelphia got in this country. I think people are waking up, not just to, you know, the injustice of this, but to the fact that we have a responsibility to future generations, and we need to be waking up on, you know, on every level. And thankfully, our spiritual leaders, our religious leaders, our faith leaders are stepping into the gap. And I think it's having a huge impact.
And Daphne, what are some of the lessons that activists learned from their very creative work against Shell, the kayaktivism that people participated in, the very and also the sort of coalition work that was done, the coming together of activists from various backgrounds, you know, all the way from formal organizations like Greenpeace to individual residents to members of indigenous communities, that seemed to be fairly new.
You know, it was absolutely beautiful. I was there as the Portland action was unfolding. We were inspired, very inspired by what they had done up in Seattle, the kayaktivists blockading the Polar Pioneer. And then we, when we saw that the Fenica icebreaker was coming to Portland, there was just no question. We were going to mobilize and blockade the Fenica. And of course, originally, we had no idea Greenpeace was going to join us and descend from the bridges. But when they did, there was that moment when the ship began heading for the bridge and it stopped and it turned around. And it reminded me of the Tiananmen Square tanks rolling towards that lone protester, and when they stopped. And I think it was a very emotional moment for everybody that was watching as that happened, because what it revealed was the power of individuals to stand down some of the largest and most powerful forces and to win. And today we know our victory was sealed that day, you know, that we have been victorious. And so I think what we have learned from all of this is that when we stand together, when we unite together, no matter how small our individual actions may seem, we are extremely powerful.
And Sweetwater, a similar question to you. What's next? How are activists like yourselves now setting your sight on other, because Shell, other companies, Shell is certainly not the only fossil fuel company to be ravaging the earth. There's plenty of corporate targets to go around. Do you have any sense of what's next?
Yes. In fact, we were having meetings about that yesterday, too. What we face here in Washington are the coal and oil trains, the proposed terminals, coal terminals, the one they want to make on Lummi and Lummi Nation's sacred land and a burial ground, even. And they have some proposed in Longview and down there in Oregon. So there's always more work to be done. But so the work I'm doing is to bring more awareness and teaching about our indigenous ways, our cultural, you know, because all the work that I do, I'm bringing in our cultural perspective, in our teachings, in our ceremonies, and doing the healing work too. So, and educating non-natives. In fact, I was just down in Oregon too. I had to give workshops about historical trauma, history of colonization, because even this is I call it corporate colonization. And it has continued on, and it's just another ship coming into our shores. So, but in learning how to work with natives and indigenous peoples and allowing them to take the lead, and that's what the is change in the way we're doing things here in Washington. I've seen it with the oil trains. I've seen it with Shell. And being more respectful of the indigenous people, following protocols, that we are on somebody's land, sacred land, that we have permission to be there to do this work. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to never forget to do those, to unite in prayers and ceremonies and doing the work. So the next step, I'm also working with the next generation. Many of the people I'm collaborating with, I'm working with starting Native Youth Action Camps. That a lot of my partners are collaborating with are in their 20s. So it's preparing the next generations to continue this work because it's not over. And as long as we're here, there is always another battle to fight against. But if it's a spiritual battle, we will have a victory just as this.
And finally, Daphne, as well, how can the Arctic be kept completely off limits? Can our audience find out something in terms of how, if there are any petitions or any actions planned, particularly against either companies themselves or yes. the government or President yeah. Obama?
Yeah, there's plenty. First of all, I wanted to say, yes, send a letter to President Obama calling for the Arctic to be off limits. Greenpeace has a great petition on their website. You can go on their website and sign that. But I also wanted to say Portland is going to be hosting all of the major West Coast cities in early the mayors of the West Coast cities in early November, and they're going to be discussing a climate agenda. And what we are calling for in Portland is no new fossil fuel infrastructure on the entire West Coast and for the Arctic to be completely off limits. And we are issuing that call in solidarity with Native Americans who have been taking a stand for their treaty rights in opposition to all of these terminals. Many of them are in violation of Native American treaty rights. And also in alliance with the climate scientists who say mm-hmm. we need to leave 80% of the oil and gas and coal in the ground. So we're looking forward to working in collaboration with activists from all of the West Coast major cities in issuing that call. And you can learn more about our coalition, climate-action-coalition.org, and get in touch with us. We'd love to work with people up and down the West Coast.
And we'll post that to our website, climate-action-coalition.org. And there's also greenpeace.org, where you can find a petition, Keep Fossil Fuels in the Ground. You can check uprisingwithsonali.com later today for those links. Daphne and Sweetwater, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
My guests are Daphne Wysham, Director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Center for Sustainable Economy, and then Sweetwater Nanaok, who is the Director of Idle No More Washington. This is Uprising. When we come back, Dr. Susan Love joins us in studio. Stay tuned.